Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on business principles when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Well, you know, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. It's public business that's conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper are things like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there's no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin or currency. Well, that's very true when we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real world, out in the marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are owed on that paper versus gold and silver. Now, God and our founding fathers didn't give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew, and they knew as a matter of law, that gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for you and I to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take that gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason. They knew, and they knew full well when they did it back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin, to take away the people's right to property, and to destroy those property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. So let me show you how to do just that. We do that in our business school, which is now on compact disc for adult home school. Now, if you'd like more information about our private business school, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free of charge, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, and go to the archives page. Well, in business, there are certain principles that we follow if we want to get a desired result. Business here in the United States is conducted along what we call the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto model. There's only two models of business in the world. It's the Ten Commandment model and the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto model. Now, we used to practice the Ten Commandment model of business here in the United States. We had gold and silver coin. It's mandated in our Constitution. Those are called just weights and balances. But over time, someone persuaded us that we needed to give up the gold and silver and go to paper money and central banking, income tax, public school, the abandonment of property and property rights, and we've done that. And then we got a result that comes from that. And when I talk to people, they tell me they're dissatisfied with the results that they're getting. They're dissatisfied with government regulation. They're unhappy with OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, the income tax, Social Security, all of the taxes and withholding, and all of the regulations and rules that they have to follow. They're not happy with that at all. And I remind them that they elected to do that. They did it voluntarily, and they continue to do it voluntarily. Nobody's forcing you into public business. You do that voluntarily. In fact, you have to go out of your way. You have to get up early in the morning and go downtown. You have to pay money in order to get a business license and to open a public business and do business with the general public out on Main Street. Now, conversely, the law school here is a private business. We're not licensed, bonded, or insured. We're not open to the public. We're not complaining. I'm not complaining about OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, the IRS, the Federal Reserve, the United States government, the government of Missouri. I don't have a complaint with them, and I'm not complaining about them. I'm not voting for anybody. I'm not trying to overthrow the government, abolish the IRS or the Federal Reserve. In fact, I'm such a small minority, and I would feel bad if I said to you that we needed to abolish the IRS, the FBI, the CIA, or the Republican or Democratic Party. And the reason for that is that that's what the majority of people want. Most people in America do not want free enterprise or competitive free enterprise capitalism. They certainly don't want a free marketplace. That's most people. Most people want the income tax, Social Security, aid to families with dependent children, a safety net, a social net. They want things like government-free health care, retirement. They want the benefits the government has to offer, and I certainly don't want to get in the way of anybody else's happiness and success. Now, I personally don't want to participate in the program. And I noticed last night on the news, as an illustration here, that 24 states in the union now have laws pending to do something to counteract this national health care insurance program that's been enacted by Congress. Now, that's half the states in the union don't like the program. I'm not opposed to the program at all. I'm not for it, but I'm not against it. I'm not involved in it, and I'm not going to participate in it. I'm not going to pay for national health care insurance. I'm not going to buy the insurance program. I'm not going to participate in it one way or the other. And so why would I be opposed to it? You know, it's a choice that you make. Now, I believe in free enterprise capitalism, and I'm a subscriber to it. I'm a beneficiary of it. And I also believe in the Ten Commandment model of doing business, and there are certain business principles that flow from this Ten Commandment model. So when we open our business school, we start off, before we even get to lesson one, and I tell my students, I have 150 business principles that I would like to suggest that we cover first before we talk about buying, selling, and trading and doing business, so that you can see where I'm coming from, and maybe this won't fit into your philosophy. Maybe this doesn't meet your expectations, in which case there's the door, and don't let it hit you in the hind end on the way out. But this is what we believe, this is what we participate in, this is what we espouse here. And so there's 150 of these. If you got a pen and paper out there, why don't you get it out? And I'll go through these 150 in a series of programs here called Business Principles. And they start off with number one, the beginning of all business is called the offer. And the next step in the business transaction is called the acceptance. In order for us to do business, somebody has to make an offer, and somebody has to accept the offer. So number one is the offer. Number two is the acceptance. And that's the beginning of what we call a contract. It is not the contract, but it's half of it. So here's what a contract is. A contract is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. So there are four elements that have to be present in order for us to have a contract. Now, we don't have to have a contract to do business, but business is generally predicated upon contract. It doesn't have to be, but generally speaking, it is. So a contract then is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. So the first two elements then to business is an offer with an acceptance. Now, all business, number three, all business is transacted by unequals. Unequals. You see, boys and girls, if we were equal, we could not do business. Think about it. Let's suppose that you have a battery charger. Now, you go down to Walmart and you go into the automotive section and you see that they've got 30 battery chargers up on the wall. Can Walmart sell you a battery charger? Probably not. Why? Well, you've already got one. Can you sell your battery charger to Walmart? Well, no. Their business is selling battery chargers, not buying them. And number two, they've already got 30 on the shelf. Why would they want to buy yours? So the problem that you have is that you and Walmart are equal. You both have battery chargers. Now, let's reverse this out. Let's suppose that Walmart has a run on battery chargers, and they sell out all of their battery chargers, and they don't have any on the wall. All of a sudden, they're in the market for buying a truckload of battery chargers, aren't they? And let's suppose that your battery charger goes haywire, and you have to throw it out because it can't be repaired. And all of a sudden, you don't have a battery charger, and when you go to Walmart, you would be in the market to buy one of theirs. So if you'll think about it, all business is transacted by unequals. So what we're looking for then in the business world is an inequality that we can make equal. All right, number four, if the offer is good, take it as is. And never just refuse an offer. Make a counter offer if you don't like the offer. And there's two good reasons for that. If you have a good offer and you try to Jew the guy down even more, you cause hard feelings. And I had a guy do that to me one time at an airplane, and I was in trouble, couldn't make the payments, and I offered the airplane to him for $1,500. I paid $42, offered it to him for $15, and in the final analysis, he said, well, I'll give you $750. In the final analysis, I sold it to him for $750, but I never bought anything from him again, and I never did business with him again, and I wouldn't do business with him today if he were to walk in my door, and that's because he took advantage of me. He paid me half of what was a good offer. And it wouldn't harm him to pay me the $1,500. It was still a hell of a deal, but he wanted to make an even better deal. He did. He made an even better deal. He saved $750 on that transaction, but had he paid me the $1,500, I would have bought my cars from him. I would have sung his praises. I would have promoted his business. I would have sold much more than the $750 that he made off of me over and over again because he would have had a happy, satisfied customer. As it turned out, he turned out a a dissatisfied customer. So there's a very important business principle here for you to learn. If the offer is a good one, take it as is. And never just refuse the offer. Always make a counteroffer if you don't like the offer. You come back and you say, well, I don't think that it's worth that much, but here's what I'll pay. Here's my card. This is good for 3 days. And if you want it, fine. If you don't, we'll sell it to somebody else. Or, no, I don't want your car, but I would take a pickup, a boat, or an airplane. And then what you do when you make a counteroffer, you're not shutting the fellow off and saying, I don't want to do business with you. You're saying, I want to do business with you, but I don't want to do that business with you. Let's do something else. And it leaves the door open for other business transactions in the future. Number six, never accept a deal that you can't perform your end of. Oftentimes, a deal comes along, you say, wow, that deal is so good, I can't let it go by. But if you were to think about that a little bit, you're unable to actually perform your end of the deal. In the process, when you fail to perform your end of the deal, you just cause hard feelings for any future transaction that you could have done in the future. And you shut the door on doing business with that guy in the future because you didn't keep your end of the bargain on the last transaction. If you can't perform on the transaction, just tell the guy, I'm unable to perform on the transaction at this time. But keep me in mind 6 months from now, and when I'm in a better position, we can do business again. Number seven, the best business is repeat business. And repeat business always follows from a good business transaction or experience. So if you have a good business experience, you want to go back and do business with that guy again. If you were happy and satisfied with that Ford automobile, you want to go back and buy another one. But if you bought a car and it wasn't a good one, then you don't like that brand. If you had a bad experience in the business transaction that you did the last time, you don't want to do business with that guy again. And you're certainly not going to go back and repeat it. And so it's important for you to make sure that your customer is happy and satisfied, whether he's the buyer or the seller. Whichever side of the transaction you're on, make sure that the guy you're dealing with is happy and satisfied with the transaction. Number eight, you never lost any money on any deal you didn't make. Now, you've lost some money on some deals you wish you hadn't made. So when somebody says, hurry, 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 step right up, don't be the last person on your block to miss out on these once-in-a-lifetime deals, never before, and never again, values like these, everything goes floor to ceiling, wall to wall, regardless of cost, loss, or value. When you hear those kinds of pitches, you always want to remember, you never lost any money on any deal you didn't make. But you're more likely to lose money on a deal that you're making if it's not a good deal going in. You don't have to make every deal that's presented. Never charge interest and never pay interest. Interest violates the common law. It violates the law of God. He told you not to charge it and not to pay it. If you're paying it, you become an accessory after the fact, if not before. And if you're charging it, you're an accessory before the fact and probably after if you're collecting it. And so the better modality for doing business, and I buy and sell real estate. I buy and sell vehicles and automobiles. I don't charge anybody interest and I don't pay them interest. And I've been asked many times, well, how do you buy a house and not pay interest? I tell the guy that's selling the house, I don't pay interest. Well, I'm going to get paid interest or I'm not going to sell the house to you. Well, that's fine. Always remember that he who has the gold makes the rules, not he who has the house makes the rules. It's not the seller that makes the rules, boys and girls, it's the buyer. The buyer makes the rules. It's the consumer. It's the customer. So when I want to buy a house, I say, well, here's what I'd like to offer, and here's the way I'd like to pay for it, and here's the way I propose that we set up the deal. And then the other guy can say, well, no, I don't like that, and here's what I want, A, B, C, D. And then you can come back with another round of negotiation and say, well, I don't want to do that, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I tell people pretty plainly, I'm a Hebrew. I don't practice usury and interest. So let's work out something else. Now, sometimes in place of usury and interest, a higher price for the product will suffice. How about a cash payment, and I take all of my discounts? The better way to do business is to take your discounts and pay cash. But sometimes buying a property or buying something on time, over time, can actually be more profitable or advantageous than paying cash. It's not often. Generally speaking, it's more advantageous to pay cash and take delivery, but that isn't always the case. There are some exceptions to that. Do unto your customer that which you would have your customer do unto you. That's part of the golden rule. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. You can remember that rule from the Bible in Sunday school. Well, doesn't it make sense then that when we're doing business out here in the real world, if you do something good or something nice or something advantageous to your customer, that your customer is going to notice that and you'll like it. I bought a car one time years ago. It was a Chevy Nova, and I went into the dealer. It was the Chevrolet dealer on Alameda Avenue. Or no, excuse me. It was on Park Boulevard or Park Street in Alameda, California, right on the other side of the bridge when you're going into Alameda. So One of the conditions was that he fixed four or five things on the car before I took delivery. And the car sold for $600. And on Friday, when I came in to pick up the car, after I test driven it, I noticed I had a quarter of a tank of gas. But when I picked the car up, I noticed I had a full tank of gas. So that dealer now followed a couple of very important business principles. Number one, when you're the seller, always deliver more than you agreed to. And when you're the buyer, always pay more than you agreed to. And by doing that, the other party, the counterparty to your transaction here, is getting something more than you agreed to. You're getting something more than you agreed to. That's the way we create good, happy, satisfied counterparties. If you agree to do something and then you don't perform it, it makes the other party, your counterparty, feel bad. When the other side was supposed to do something and they didn't do it for you, then it makes you feel bad. When the business transaction concludes, everybody has to feel good. And the people who feel bad will not be back to do business again. It's imperative that everybody leaves the table happy and satisfied. So doing unto your customer that which you'd have your customer do to you just makes good business sense. So ask yourself, well, what would I want him to do? That's what I'm going to do for him. Now, when you're the seller, you always deliver more than you agreed to. And when you're the buyer, you always pay more than you agreed to. So I bought the car for $600. And when he delivered the car with all of the work and that he agreed to do, plus he filled the gas tank, which he had not agreed to do. And when I came in and paid for the car, I paid him with six $100 bills, exactly on time. I didn't screw him over with a shortage and I'll pay some more of it on time or I'll pay you the balance next week. Furthermore, you've got to pay your rent, don't you? Have you ever thought about paying the landlord early rather than late? I know it's a wild new concept over here, but if you owe the rent on the 1st and it has to be paid by the 5th, and you paid your rent on the 25th of the month instead of on the 1st, then you'd be 5 days early, wouldn't you? That's paying more than the landlord expects. So when you pay on time or you pay with cash, then you are paying more than is expected of you. You're doing more. You're going further. There's a biblical principle, you know, that comes from Jesus. He said, count yourself as being an unprofitable servant when you've done everything that you're required to do. So the moral of the story is you go a little bit above and beyond what's required of you, and that makes you a profitable servant. Now, after you've paid your rent 5 days early, month after month, and then something comes up and you're unable to pay the rent right on time, you go to the landlord and you say, I'm unable to pay my rent on time. I need 2 or 3 weeks until this check comes in, until this deal closes. He'll give it to you in a heartbeat. But when you're always paying your rent late, and then you go to the landlord and say, hey, I need some more time, he's not very inclined to give it to you. You ever notice that? So when you're the seller, always deliver more than you agreed to. When you're the buyer, always deliver more than you've agreed to. Every transaction, number 14, every transaction must benefit all of the parties every time. It has to benefit the seller, and it has to benefit the buyer. If there's any collateral parties to the transaction, everybody there has to get out of the transaction what he agreed to deliver and what he expects to receive. And if for some reason in the midst of the transaction someone suggests to you, hey, forget about him, he doesn't count. Or, no, we don't want to buy that even after we've agreed to it, so forget about that. Don't do that. A man's word is his bond, and once the transaction's been agreed to, make sure that the transaction comes to fruition exactly the way everybody agreed to the terms and conditions. I know it may be easy and it may be tempting to screw that guy or some other guy out of something, a little bit or a whole bunch, but don't do it. And by doing that, you develop a reputation in business and with your business associates. And pretty soon, they all know that if Gordon said it, you can bank on it. And if he said he wasn't going to do it, you can be pretty sure he's not going to do that. All right, now number 15, never risk more than you can afford to lose. Oftentimes on transactions, people want to gamble. Business is not the place to gamble, and business is not a gambling adventure. If you want to gamble, go to Las Vegas. Put your money on the pass line, and if the dice come up right, good. And if they don't, you had a lot of fun. But in business, we don't gamble. Business is not a place to gamble, and it's not a gambling enterprise. So never risk any more than you can afford to lose, and oftentimes people gamble in their business transactions, and then they're disappointed when they lose. And remember, when you gamble, at least half of the time you're going to lose. If everything was exactly even and the playing field was exactly level, you would lose 50%. Typically, in gambling, you lose more than 50%. Number 16, never position yourself in a transaction so that you can be taken advantage of. And so when the transaction is being negotiated, And the deal calls for, well, send me the check and then I'll send you the goods. You're positioning yourself in a place where when you send the money, the other guy might not send the goods. So you have positioned yourself in a place where, and I've heard people say, well, you have to pay first, otherwise they won't ship you the goods. Well, have you heard of COD? So that when the UPS driver delivers the goods, you can pay for them when they're delivered? So when somebody says to me, well, I don't ship COD, well, I don't pay cash in advance, well, then I won't sell to you. That's fine. I'll go buy from somebody else. Did you believe that eBay is the only place on earth to buy these goods and services? So never position yourself in a transaction so that you can be taken advantage of, and you never will be. So if I know somebody on the other end of the transaction, I don't mind sending the guy that I know is honest, the money up front. But I've noticed that when I sent strangers the money up front, sometimes I didn't get my goods, and then I was disappointed. And then I would rather that you be disappointed than that I be disappointed. Number 17, never trust anyone. Number 18, thou shalt not steal. And if you'll think about trust, well, trust is fine. And then I trust my friends. But strangers, I don't trust. And the people that I do business with, I don't trust. I do business with them because they're performers. Good business is based upon performance, not trust. Trust is a gamble. And sometimes it pays and sometimes it doesn't. And I know you're a nice guy. And all things being equal, just ship it to me COD. A quick story here. I had a man offer me one time a machine that would produce electricity for my house forever, free. The price of the machine was $17,000. And I said to the man, I'm very interested in that machine. In fact, I would like to buy three of those machines, and I'll buy two, and I will pay cash for two machines. And if the two machines work, then I want to buy a third one. And he was very excited. And he said, well, let's see, 17 and 17 is 34. And so I said, well, I don't want to pay you cash in advance. And he said, well, you have to pay us cash in advance because we don't have the machines made yet, and we're in the process of building the factory. And so the deal is that we're going to sell them at this cheap price, $17,000, but once the factory is built, you'll have to pay $25,000. I said, okay, here's what I'll do. You go ahead and build your factory and then deliver two. If they work, I will pay you in gold coin. And he said, well, we need to sell a bunch of them first for the discount so we have the cash to build the factory. And I said, I really don't want to build your factory. I just want to buy the machines. I'm not a factory builder. I'm not a financier. I'm not a bank, and I'm not putting out risk capital. I just want to buy the machine. So I'll tell you what you do. As soon as you get your first machine, you have a customer that wants to buy two and will pay you cash in gold coin, cash on delivery, but they have to be installed and working. So the minute you can deliver one, I will pay you cash for it. Well, he was sad, and I didn't buy the machine. Now, it's been about, 25 years. They sold a lot of those machines for $17,000 cash up front. They never delivered any of the machines. And there are a lot of people that paid cash up front that were disappointed. I was never disappointed. Never. Now, I didn't receive my machine either, but I still have my $17,000. They paid cash up front. They don't have their machines, and they don't have their $17,000. I don't have my machine, but I have my $17,000. I didn't risk more than I could afford to lose, and I didn't trust anyone, and I didn't let him steal from me. Thou shalt not steal works both ways. You shouldn't be stealing from other people, and you shouldn't let other people steal from you. That's why we have a law that says, thou shalt not steal. Hey, we're at the halfway point here, so let me give you a reminder here that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling and asking for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417 273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about business principles, and as I mentioned at the beginning of our dialogue here, or monologue, I'm not complaining about the United States government or the state of Missouri, the IRS, the EPA, the state tax commission, or any of the governmental agencies and licensing bureaus and bodies. And that's primarily because I don't do business with any of them. I operate a private business as opposed to a public business, and we'll take a look at that as we progress along because of the two models that we're going to compare, that is the Ten Commandment model and the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto model. I subscribe to that Ten Commandments model. And as a result of that, I have a lot fewer complaints than a lot of people who subscribe to and practice the 10-plank model. And they oftentimes complain about OSHA and the EPA and the IRS and the State Tax Commission and licensing boards and agencies and bodies and so on. And I'm certainly not here to argue with you, and I don't want to get in the way of all of the happiness and success that goes on with people who actually want to practice that 10-plank model. Not trying to thwart you in any way. But my experience now comes into play, and I want to share with you my own personal experience and the way that I do business, because I'm not complaining about my customer, I'm not complaining about my income or outgo, and I'm just happy as a clam at high tide. Let's go to number 19. Number 19 calls for, in a multitude of counsel, there is safety. That's a biblical proverb. It comes from the book of Proverbs. Counsel, that's where somebody who has already done this at some time in the past and has experience. And then you go to that person and you say, hey, what happened when you did this? You know, all things being equal, the guy will probably tell you, well, here's what happened when I did that. Would you do that again? And I asked my dad that. I said, did you join the Army? He said, no. And I said, well, then how'd you get in the Army? He said, I was drafted. And then I said, was it a good experience? And he thought for a minute and he said, yes, on balance, it was a good experience and I'm glad I did it. And I said, would you do it again? And he said, no. And I said, would you join the Army? He said, no. And I said, well, then if you wouldn't join the Army and if you wouldn't do it again, why do you think it was a good experience? He said, even bad experiences have a good end. I learned a lot, and one of the things that I learned was, you ought not to join the Army. Okay, so I never did join the Army. I think I made the right choice. Over the years, I have asked people who have joined the military services, would you do that again? And by and large, not in every single case, some people have joined and they stayed in for 20 or 30 years, they made a career of it, they liked it, they enjoyed it. But by and large, probably 80%, maybe more, of the people that I've interviewed have all said, no, I made a mistake when I joined the Army, the Navy, the Marines, or the Coast Guard, or somebody else. And as a result of that, it really screwed up my life or interfered with my life or. So from that point of view, this business principle that says that you need advice or you should rely upon a counsel or a multitude of counsel, their safety, go out and ask several people, and then you'll get a better view of the enterprise that you want to engage in from people that have already done it before you. If nothing else, they can tell you the best way or the most logical way to accomplish your goal. Number 20, you must be in full control of your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And that's because there are five motivators to human nature. And if you can't control your vanity, control your jealousy, control your lust, control your greed, and control your fear, then you can rest assured that somebody out there is going to control you by way of your vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. The five motivators of human nature. Number 21, Find a Need and Fill It, was written by Henry Kaiser on all of his concrete trucks. He wrote it on the barrel of his cement trucks, and as the truck was driving down the street, and you stopped at a red light, and then you looked over at the truck next to you, the barrel would be rolling over. And on the side of the barrel, it would say, find a need. And then as the barrel would continue to roll over, on the other side, it would say, and fill it. That is the fundamental basis of entrepreneurial business. Finding a need and then filling it. So that need may be window washing, or it may be landscaping. There's all kinds of things out there in the world that need to be done. There's no end to work. And all of the work has not been done yet. So you take a look around, and what is it in your community that needs being done, and get out there and start doing it. And then you'll find out that there's a business right there. Number 22, there's no such thing as unemployment. When I hear somebody say that they're unemployed, or I hear that the unemployment rate is 9.7%, you know, what you're saying is all the work has been done. No, what that is all of the work that needs doing for $20 an hour has been done. But there's still a lot of work out there that needs to be done for $15 an hour, or $10 an hour, or $5 an hour. And if there isn't any work out there for $5 an hour, I'll bet you that there's a lot of work out there that needs to be done free of charge. There's no end to work, boys and girls, and you can hire yourself a job, and the best way to do that is to go out and go to work. People who are already working will find that it's a lot easier to be promoted to some other job than it is to get that job to start with, and you just can't beat working for nothing. Here's an example. I was looking for a job one time, and I went out to Bowman and Brown, and I said, I'm here to apply for the job that you have open for a choker setter. And Phil, the foreman, he said, what kind of experience do you have? And I said, I don't have any. And he said, well, did you notice that this job requires experienced only need apply? And I said, yes, sir, I saw that, experienced only need apply. But I presumed that that was for the people who was going to be hired and paid immediately. You see, sir, I'm here to work free until I get the experience that you give me, and then you determine when you think I'm competent and qualified to hold the position, and then you start paying me. And he couldn't believe his earballs. So he went and got the boss. The boss's name was Larry Brown. Larry Brown came in, and then he said, I'm a punk kid, 19 years old, and Larry Brown came in. He's probably 45 years old. And he was chewing on a cigar. The cigar wasn't burning. He just chewing on it. And this cigar was going from one side of his mouth to the other. And he said, Phil here tells me that you came looking for that choker setter job. I said, yes, sir. And then he said, you don't have any experience? And I said, no, sir. He said, well, then how in the hell do you expect to get a job? And I said, I expect to get a job by working for you free of charge. And he said, you mean you're willing to come out here and work for nothing so that you can learn how to set chokers? I said, that's exactly what I'm here to do. And he said, I've never heard of anything like that before. And I said to him, I said, well, you see, I can't get any experience. You don't want to hire me because I can't do the job. And you don't want to train me or teach me. You don't want to pay me to learn. So let me pay you to teach me. I'll go to the Larry Brown Logging Company School of Choker Setting, and I will pay you my labor worth $2.50 an hour until such time as I can produce $2.50 an hour, and then you can determine how much you think I'm worth and pay me accordingly. And he said, Phil, take this man down to the bunkhouse. Get him a room. You're hired. So I went to work, and at the end of the 2 weeks, I evidently learned how to do the job to the satisfaction of Phil, the foreman, and Larry Brown, the owner, because at the end of the 2 weeks, I got a check for the full amount of time that I put in. So I came down to the office with the check, and I asked the secretary to see Mr. Brown. And Brown said, well, bring him in. And so I went into his office, and he said, what can I do for you, son? And I said, sir, there's been a mistake. I received a check here today for the full amount of the 2 weeks that I've worked. Now, our agreement is that I would work free until such time as you determined that I was competent and qualified to hold the position. And so I'm here to return the check, but to ask you, do you think maybe I'm worth something? And he looked at me and he said, son, I think you're worth everything that I've paid you and probably more. Take your money, and I'm proud to have you working for me. I said, well, thank you very much, Mr. Brown, and I'll return that by working as hard as I can. I had a job there for as long as I wanted. I never wanted for a job. I left there at some point in time and went to work somewhere else. But the moral to the story is I was very well received, got paid everything I was entitled to, and I was taught how to do the job. I was never unemployed. I have never had a day of unemployment in my life. And if I live to be 110, I will never see a day of unemployment. Because, boys and girls, I can see that there's a lot of work out there that needs doing. and then I can get my ass out there and go do it. Now, number 23, a man's word is his bond. So don't fail to do that which you have agreed to. Now, if you'll remember here, I agreed that I would work free. I saw the check, and it wasn't lost on me that the boss evidently thought that I was worth the money, and he paid me. But I went into his office and offered him his check back because I had agreed to work free. There could have been a mistake, and I didn't want that mistake to come to the fore. Furthermore, I wanted the boss to recognize my word, and that my word was good. He did. He didn't miss it. And I said that's what I would do, and that's what I did. Now, I've hired myself a job on several occasions in my life. When I'm out of a job, I don't go down to draw unemployment. I go knock on somebody's door that needs my services, and then I offer my services free, or until such time as he's satisfied that I'm making him a profit. Now, understand this. Whatever you're being paid, you have to make at least double that and a little bit more to pay for your taxes. So when a man's paying you $10 an hour and you produce $10 an hour, you are an unprofitable servant. You're just paying your board and room. If you're being paid $10 an hour and you produce $20 an hour, you're still an unprofitable servant. And that's because you're not covering all of your expenses, you're just covering the majority of them. But when you're working for $10 an hour and you're producing $25 an hour, you now are a profitable servant, doing that minimum that is required to hold your job. You're now paying yourself your $10 an hour, you're paying the boss $10 an hour, and you're paying your taxes, which is $5 an hour. Now, if you want to become an indispensable servant, you produce $30 or $35 an hour. Now, you're the number one employee in your company. You're now indispensable because you produce more than anybody else there. That means that when layoffs come, everybody there will be laid off, and you'll be the last one to be let go. Number 24, a deal in your hand is worth two in your head. That comes from an old proverb that says a bird in your hand is worth two in the bush. And many times people have ideas. Now, if you have a deal, and then you go out and you close that deal, that one's done. Sitting around daydreaming about how much money you're going to make if this, that, and another thing happens over here is like having a bird or two in the bush. You're better off to have a deal that pays you $5 an hour now rather than that hoped-for deal that's going to pay you $10 an hour maybe at some time in the future. Now, unreasonable expectations lead to poverty. Unreasonable expectations lead to poverty. People have expectations. They want to retire at age 60 or 50 or something, and they want to drive a Winnebago around, and they want to have a retirement income for life and sit back and take in the slack and enjoy their golden years. Well, those are expectations that at this juncture in history are totally unreasonable. It isn't that some people haven't done that in the past and that some people aren't going to do that in the future, but it's not likely that it's going to be you. Now, I'm 70 years old plus, and I'm not retired. I'm not on Social Security. I get up and go to work every day. I have a job that needs to be done, and I do it. And if I live to be 80 or 90, I will be getting up every day and going out and doing that job. And I'm not living in poverty. I'm not subjected to poverty. I don't expect to be stricken by poverty. But when I go to Walmart, I see old people called greeters who hand me or push to me my shopping cart, people that have retired and then had to come out of retirement in order to go to work for minimum wage in order to pay the rent. They had unreasonable expectations, and their unreasonable expectations have led them into poverty. So while you're young and while you've still got a roof over your head and a body to do work with, always remember that these unreasonable expectations have led those people into poverty, and your unreasonable expectations will lead you into that same poverty. Now, I'm just as old as they are, but I'm not in poverty, and my expectations were never that I was going to retire on somebody else while they paid their Social Security so that I could enjoy my golden years. Now, number 26 says, if you can't hang on to it, you don't need to make it. Can you remember all the grade B movies that you've seen where this old prospector has been out working in the mountains, maybe for 30 years, and finally one day he comes into town and he's got some ore samples, and he says, I've struck it rich, I've hit the mother lode. And what happens to him? Well, there's this pretty woman, and she gets him drunk, and pretty soon he gives away the map, and she gives it to the owner of the bar, and the owner of the bar, while he's drunk, gets him to sign over his mine and cheats him out of it, and then Tom Mix or Roy Rogers or the Lone Ranger has to save this old fool from himself, and that's the plot in the movie. Now, in the movie, it always comes out right, doesn't it? You know, Roy Rogers or Tom Mix or somebody saves this old fool from himself, and he gets his mind back, and he lives happily ever after. But out here in the real world, it doesn't work that way. And when Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, and Bank of America raped, robbed, and pillaged all of you property owners of America, all of you people with mortgages on your houses, all of you taxpayers, for $29.1 trillion, do you remember that? Okay. Well, that's like having it, and then you were unable to hang on to it. Unable to hang on to it. You go out and you work hard and you make money and you put it in your 401k just to find out that the government came in and nationalized it. Or you went out and you bought a house and you made all your payments on it only to find out that the bank repossessed it because you lost your job. If you can't hang on to it, boys and girls, you don't need to make it in the first place. So if you're going to go out and make it, then make sure that you can hang on to it. It doesn't make any difference if you make your miss your payment on the first payment or the 360th payment. The missed payment causes foreclosure on your house. It's best if your house is foreclosed on the first five payments rather than one of the last five. Buying things on time is bad business. Credit business is bad business to start with. But going forward in time, if you can't hang on to it, then you don't need to make it. And Americans have been unable to hang on to all of the wealth that they worked so hard to go out and create and produce. And somebody else now, some guy in the bank, the brokerage house, some interloper over here has come and taken your mine away from you. And there isn't any Tom Mix to come back and save you. Now, number 27 says, if you never do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. Oftentimes, I ask students when they come in here, do you ever do business with the mafia? And they always say, no, we don't do business with the mafia. I say, well, do you do business with government? And they say, well, yeah. Always remember, if you don't do business with a thief, you'll never be stolen from. Hey, I'm out of time. Let me give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and The Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, in The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.